Talk shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is the 8th episode of Wrestling Culture Podcast. Dave Musgrave here with Dylan Hales. And today we have our special guest. Some may call him Good Helmet. Some may call him the pagan god of wrestling comps. And some may just call him the friendly voice that just won't quit. We'll call him Will. Will, how are you?
Yeah, Dean calls me a manly Texan. So
I was about to say, I'd like to call him Mr. Texas.
Yeah.
Texas Perk 2. It sounds like a Tony Atlas character or something.
I like to call him the second sexiest boy toy from San Antonio.
that's not a true statement. I'm gonna go on record as saying that is not true. Maybe 15 years ago. Not now. But,
I like to call him Alamofo.
Alamofo. There you go. Now, speaking of Texas, you know, because I wouldn't be on a podcast wasn't shilling something. I'm working on a Dusty Rhodes set, and he is by far the sexiest man ever to come out of Texas.
He may be. He certainly could talk his way into the ladies' underwear.
Nice.
That could be a very good set.
I wonder, who Dusty Rhodes, like, you know, like, we always wonder, like, you know, who have celebrities fucked, right? I wonder who Dusty Rhodes was dating. Like, was he dating, like, Crystal Gayle? Or, you know, Wynonna Judd? Was she the fat one, Wynonna?
Yes.
Yeah, see, okay, I could see her nailing her.
I wonder if he actually tapped Sapphire myself.
Well, see, if he was into hair pulling, Crystal Gayle's definitely an option. I'm just going to bring the bad jokes for the entire time. Like, that's all it's going to be is just me telling shitty jokes from beginning to end.
Well, that's your gimmick, right?
Yeah, that is pretty much my gimmick. That is basically my gimmick, yes.
So what are we talking about today, Dave?
The idea is to talk about All Japan and how awesome it is.
All Japan of the 80s. We should specify that a little bit.
We won't be focusing on any. We won't be having a voodoo murder soliloquies here by any means. So, myself, I have done my ballot. I have completed it, Dylan.
I have not completed my ballot, but I've sort of broken it down into subcategories of stuff that, you know, stuff that was really, really, really good, upper tier, and then middle tier, and then bottom tier. And by ballot, for those of you who don't know, because this podcast actually goes a few places that I think some of the other normal podcasts don't always go, we're talking about the best of the 80s All Japan set that Mr. Good Helmet has put together with it via committee with some other folks as part of the Death Valley Driver Best of the 80s project.
Yeah, I like to call myself Mr. Hat Rack.
Mr. Rack, I would say. Who was on that committee for selecting this one, Will?
It was myself, Chris Zellner, and my good friend Childs, who's a... he's one of the guys who's one of the workhorses of the DVD-VR-80s project. He's watched more 1980s Japanese wrestling than any human elf, any human I know. Seriously.
Yeah,
he's watched
every
single match I could get from New Japan, he's watched, and every single match I could get from All Japan, he's watched in the 1980s. And I'm sure he's watched all the other Japan from... you know, that they did before, like the UWF and FMW. So
he's also watched a lot of Joshi, which nobody else has.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, yeah, he's by far the Japan guy out of this project for sure.
Is he a Hiroshi Wajima completist?
No, that's Eric.
Eric?
Yes.
that's Eric and his Wajima versus Abby fetish. I guess it wouldn't be a podcast if somebody didn't mention Wajima versus Abdul the Butcher.
Yeah, not Abdullah's finest moment. I'm just going to go on.
To further explain for anybody who might not know, basically the idea is that you pick a committee of 3 to 4 people, I guess, and get every piece of footage you can of a given territory during a given era, watch all of it, and then come up with the top 150 or so matches. And then people can pick up those sets, and then they rate those from 1 to 150. Or assuming
that's correct.
No, one,
that's right.
From top to bottom. So, this was the second one that I've completed. I did the New Japan one. I didn't finish that one on time, so I can't really...
Shame.
Okay, I've grown up since then, so I can't cut on people who have to finish this one. I've grown up in my consumption ability. Will, this was a great set, I got to tell you.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope more people enjoyed it. To me, personally, for what I like out of my wrestling, it was my favorite 1980 set. Other people disagree. I know other people like the New Japan set better. Some, you know, American fans, they're going to love the Memphis and Mid-South sets. I don't know anyone who said that Texas was their favorite set, so...
I don't think Texas was a bad set by any means, but I think I think All Japan was definitely a clear step up. I am one of the people who preferred the New Japan set, but it had very little to do with the overall quality of the wrestling. I mean, like, to me, both have extremely high quality wrestling from beginning to end, right? I mean, you're not looking at... it's not as if New Japan has far better matches, right? I mean, that's just not true. You know, it's not as if All Japan has, uninteresting wrestlers, because that's obviously not true, too. This set, the All Japan set, I think, is probably, in terms of trying to put together, I don't think it was too hard for me to pick my favorite match, the match that I thought was the best. But I think after you get outside of, like, the top 5 or 6 best matches, at least for me, it is really hard to differentiate between, you know, what number 6 and number 50 is. There's just so much meat. There's so much quality in there. I guess a lot of it is the same faces to a degree, but... I think that if anything, that just tells you how good some of these guys were. I don't think it's really a knock. It just tells you, you know, Tenryu and Jumbo Tsuruta, and these guys were really, really good.
No, and not to mention your Americans like Stan Hansen, Terry Funk, and those guys too as well.
Absolutely.
You know, Stan Hansen, and top 10 wrestler of all time. Sure.
I think this set really, 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 really bolsters that case for sure.
And Ric Flair is in a lot of great matches, of course, and we even have a fantastic Killer Khan match in there to continue his dominance of 80 sets.
Killer Khan's one of those guys that, we'll just go on a tangent, who, really, you have to re-examine him because, I don't know, personally, I never really liked his American stuff. I never liked the extended nerve holds and, that kind of evil foreigner coming to America type vibe, you know, but on all of the sets, I mean, he just performs. I mean, it makes me really want to evaluate what he did in WWF, you know, when he was there in the early 80s and say, was that Andre Killer Khan match as bad as everyone thought it was? You know?
Yeah. I think with Killer Khan, you know, I like in both my porn and my wrestling is good facials, but like with Killer Khan, I think he has very like among the best facial expressions I've ever seen in wrestling. Seriously, like he's a guy who, when we were watching all the stuff for ECW over the course of the last year and a half. Tajiri was a guy who I thought had really excellent facial expressions. Was really good at getting across whatever character and whatever, you know, he was supposed to be expressing at given moments in the match by just flipping a different switch and making a different mannerism. Killer Khan to me is as good or better, you know, than even Tajiri in that regard. Just really, really, really good at getting over with just a simple smirk or a simple look. what's going on in the match. And that's not an easy thing. That doesn't have anything to do with athletic ability. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, how you move around a ring. That's something that you just sort of pick up. It's like a weird combination of timing and psychology that I don't think a lot of wrestlers have.
It's the acting aspect that comes in, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, basically. I mean, you know, I don't know if Killer Khan's as good an actor as Edge, of course, but...
No.
Well, you have seen him on Haven, right? I mean, come on.
My wife's
favorite show.
I will
say that both Killer Khan and Jerry do something that you don't like in your porn, which is spitting.
Well, I don't know how many listeners you guys get, but I figure in the first 5 minutes we've already managed to lose half of them.
but no, Killer Khan is definitely one of the guys comes out of the entire 80s project, I think, looking better, a lot better than he came looking in. And I think, you know, one of the fun things about these sets in general is to see what wrestlers either were not on the radar at all before, or what wrestlers, maybe they were on the radar, but they were still underappreciated or kind of undersold in terms of their overall greatness in the environment they came out of. And I don't know, Will, who do you think on the All Japan set is the... emerging star, not necessarily, you know, the Jumbo or the Tenryu or the Hanson, the very top guy, but the emerging star, the guy that after watching through all the All Japan footage, you think, boy, he's a lot better than maybe people remembered.
Well, I don't know what other people remember, to be honest with you. I just know I came out really liking Masafuchi, you know, which I don't think I'd, you know, when you watch those 1990s All Japan tapes, when you first got them, Masafuchi was in the comedy matches, you know.
Yeah.
Or you might see, like, you know, a fucking five-minute clip, you know, right before the main event on a TV show. But you never got to see any, like, really extended Masafuchi matches. Loved Masafuchi. Reaffirmed that, you know, I thought what's Kawada's partner?
Fuyuki,
I thought came out looking like roses, which, you know, he's kind of a guy who's had a reputation as being a shitty FMW fucking brawler, you know, and that's just not what Fuyuki is in this set. What a great wrestler here. And that's about Yatsu. Yatsu,
yep.
I can't believe that Yatsu isn't talked about as a bigger star.
I absolutely agree with that, Dave. What are your, you know, let me pass this question along to you. Do you agree with Will, or is there anybody else?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, well, Yatsu was actually one of my favorite guys, as little as he was on there in the New Japan set. Okay. When he was in some of that Choshu's Army stuff over there, like I thought that was brilliant. Perry Funk. I mean, everyone knows he's great, but you really. This first portion of this set really shows what a great babyface he was.
Yeah.
And it's pretty mind-blowing how good he was. Like Will said, Fuyuki was good. And honestly, I don't think I'd ever seen a Footloose tag team match before this set. So for me, you know, I went from never having seen them to thinking they're one of the best tag teams I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I love their series with the Can-Am. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those are some of the best matches on the set. And I mean, I definitely agree on Fuyuki. To me, he was the guy watching all this that was the most surprising, because he's someone that I really just sort of expected to be the other guy with Kawada, right? I mean, like, okay, I didn't think it would be bad. And I've seen Footloose matches, but it's been years. I haven't gone back and watched any of this forever. And a lot of this I'd never seen. So I figure, okay, well, you know, Fuyuki's going to be the guy that stands in the corner, gets some cool shit in from time to time, but basically Kawada's going to be the guy that carries his team. I don't think that was true at all. I mean, there are matches where I thought Fuyuki was the best guy in the match, you know, just really, really good underdog babyface selling, really good bumping, very, very well executed offense. He just came across, it seems weird, but he, you know, 80s blowjob babyface, you don't really think of Riki Fuyuki, but that's basically what he was. He was doing that in All Japan, which is not a company you would think of that necessarily would be filled with guys like that. So maybe he stands out more. And then Yatsu, holy shit. I mean, Yatsu to me was actually, and I've said this before, but and I think people think this might be a little bit crazy. I think Yatsu was actually the most consistent guy on the set. Not the best, but there I never saw Yatsu performance on any match on the set that didn't feel like it was 110%, that you didn't feel like he did it went absolutely as hard as he could from bell to bell. You know, Yatsu kind of reminded me of the Arn Anderson of the set in the sense that there are guys who maybe were better than him at certain things, and maybe if the overall big picture they were better than him too. But you never got – there's no – just like with Arn Anderson's career, there's no real period where you could go, oh, well, this was a weak period in his career. You know, basically from 85 to 95 or early 96, Arn was good. With Yatsu, it's sort of the same thing. The entire time he was around, he was good. And Yatsu and Choshu, I think, are a very underrated tag team. I mean, maybe after Kawada and Taue, that might be my favorite Japanese tag team ever.
Oh, is Dylan done talking?
Yeah, man.
I was expecting to go on another 3-4 minutes.
Well, you know, usually it's about a 10-minute soliloquy, but
yeah,
that stopped just as I pressed a button, and I was terrified that I'd ruined everything. So.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought up Choshu and Yatsu because, you know, when we talked about the New Japan set, we clearly left New Japan thinking Choshu was the rock star. And when he came to All Japan, you know, he's still a rock star. He's still Choshu, but it just seemed like he got outshined by a lot of guys. And to be fair, he's like in eight matches in my top 30 or something. So it's not like I didn't love him. I didn't come out of the set saying, "Holy shit, Choshu!" I guess because I already knew Choshu was a badass from New Japan. You know.
Yeah.
So,
I think with Choshu, to me, I always compare Choshu to like The Rock, in the sense that if you looked at each individual aspect, if you were to nitpick or look at it with a fine tooth comb, you might say, oh, this is a very flawed wrestler. He does this wrong. You know, maybe oh well, he sits around and holds longer than maybe you like. You know, he sometimes his movements around the ring aren't the smoothest movements, which I think is overrated anyway. But whatever. But every time he shows up, it feels like a big deal. And
of course, that's what he is. He's a charismatic wrestling machine. That's all he is.
Yeah, and I think there's very few wrestlers in history that are able to project that big match feel, regardless of the context. I mean, obviously he was booked in a pretty strong context too. Don't get me wrong, but Choshu, just everything about him screams this is an important match. And you know, if you're watching two matches and one of them comes across as really important, and the other comes across as a good TV match. Even somebody like myself who loves WWE superstars and studio wrestling, I'm not going to remember those matches for as long as I'm going to remember a match like the best Choshu Fujinami matches, for example.
Not to be a shill, but he reminds me of like the Japanese Dusty Rhodes. In the sense that the charisma's there. I don't know how he was on the mic. I don't speak Japanese, so forgive me for that, but Dusty Rhodes comes across as the most charismatic wrestler from like 1975 through 1985 at least. You know, there's a little bit of backlash in 86, but you know, but
those
that's what I
had with a superstar in the garden was that whole program was just golden.
Yes,
all
I agree. Stuff
it was all great. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dusty's WWF stuff is or WWWF stuff, I guess. You know, we haven't seen a lot of it, or at least I haven't. But I think that's an interesting period for Dusty. You know, I think people don't realize how impactful he was even in that setting during that brief period in '77, or maybe it was '78. I don't even remember, but
'77 and '78.
Yeah. So I think that's an underexplored aspect of Dusty Rhodes' career because everybody sees him as like a, you know, I mean, let's be honest, everybody sees him as a Southern guy. And they should, but they don't. They don't. Nobody ever thinks about the fact that this guy went up north, had a fucking really successful program with Billy Graham. You know, had some fun stuff with my boy Kim Patera. You know, and was a big draw in the Northeast too. So
it would be 77, 78, and 1980 where I have matches with Dusty Rhodes and WWF.
In 15WF.
Yes.
And so, I would say those matches actually are the best I've seen of either guy, him or Superstar.
Oh, there's plenty of good Dusty matches.
Oh, yeah, no. I like his other stuff, too. I just like that stuff that much. So.
Yeah, okay. Well,
back to All Japan, because the fucker Dusty Rhodes doesn't show up on All Japan, so.
He should, but he doesn't, you know. Another guy I just thought of, though, but real quick that I want to steal because I want to ask for you guys' thoughts on him. A guy that I think is going to come out really, when we get to Portland and the AWA, is going to come out even more as an underappreciated a guy from the 80s that maybe people are going to look at in a different light, is Rick Martel, who pops up on the All Japan set a few times, and I think every time sort of is like, holy shit, this guy's awfully good.
He had a fantastic match with Jumbo.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Martel was, and I mean, maybe I'm biased because I am watching all the Portland and AWA stuff too. But I really thought that Martel was so much better once I started getting into this stuff than I had expected. That he was legitimately shocking to me. Because Martel always just seemed like, oh, well, here's a guy who's a solid hand. You know, he knew the basics and the mechanics. But that's kind of how I always viewed him. You know, just as that flat line, solid hand, basic, like a French-Canadian Brad Armstrong, right? And then you go back and you watch this stuff now, and I mean, the Jumbo match, the Choshu match, even the Flair match on the set, they were all really good. And he seems like he's right there with those guys. Like he's not, you know, it's not as if those guys are carrying him or he's just along for the fucking ride. You know, he's right there with them.
Well, I think with Martel, the Jumbo match is a legit classic great match.
Yep.
The other matches are solid, really good matches that obviously I thought were some of the best matches from All Japan in the 1980s, or we wouldn't put them on. But I think clearly a step below that the Jumbo match on the set. So if you have the set, watch the Martel match. But clearly a great wrestler. Like when him and Flair are wrestling, and Flair's a guy I'm huge on. I'm huge on Flair on the All Japan set. I was huge on Flair pretty much every set I've watched so far. I just think Flair's, you know, up there as one of the greatest, if not the greatest. And Martel does not look like he can't hang with Flair, you know, and it doesn't, you know, like Dylan said, he's not being carried. He is absolutely right there with Jumbo, Flair, Choshu. I mean, these are the big dogs, and Martel looks, of course, like he looks like he belongs.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be revealed even more, like I said, with the AWA in Portland set, because he's arguably Buddy Rose's best opponent in Portland. I don't know that I would quite latch up, but he's in the discussion, I think. He's you know, arguably Bockwinkel's best opponent in the AWA. I don't think I quite buy that, but again, he's in the discussion. He had good matches with absolute scrubs like Boris Zukov in the AWA. I mean, he got some weak challengers there. So people are going to be able to see him against a lot of good guys. And even, you know, in situations where he's asked to carry the ball, if you guys, you know, if people listen to this, really get on board with the AWA in Portland sets, they're going to see a shitload of more good stuff from Rick Martel.
Well, let me ask Dave. Dave, you're a Canadian. How was the Martel's Canadian stuff?
I'll give you a hint. Did he just cue up to Careless Whisper?
I did. I don't know if it came across quite as well.
I didn't at all, but that was amusing to me. the one person who will get that in the world. But, yeah, how was
Dave, how much of the Canadian stuff
really,
did you watch from Montreal?
Really good. There's a lot of good stuff in Montreal. I'm going to pull up the list I have of some great matches. Sorry if that didn't come across too well there, guys. I really
what was that?
I don't know.
What was that sound bite?
There is a clip from Montreal of Rick Martel working out at the YMCA to an instrumental version of Wham's Careless Whisper.
Nice.
It is awesome. And I put it on YouTube. I will send you a link to it, actually. And well, I tried to cue it up there, but that didn't.
It sounds pretty gay, but not as gay as Martel and Tom Zink rubbing each other's shoulders in the locker room. when they were attacking WWF.
Well, it's pretty damn gay, though. They also have Dino Bravo and Rick Martel in the park working out to lots of kind of like interlude-type music and basically using each other's weight to gain traction and stuff, but also seeming like they're kind of cuddling.
Nice. Do you remember the one from Mid-Atlantic where I think it was Ricky Steamboat and Jay Strongbow were training in the park? What was that? Villain,
Youngblood or Strongbow? Youngblood or Strongbow?
Youngblood, I'm sorry.
I think I do remember
Strongbow,
it, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I don't know. Who is this? Man, I'm so tired, man.
Youngblood was his partner.
Okay, whatever. Jay Strong. Jay Strongbow.
They're all Indians.
Yeah.
Well, Jay Strongbow's not. Actually, Jay Strongbow's Italian, but whatever.
Yeah, Italian Indians. Yeah.
Well, Youngblood isn't either, though.
Look, I knew you were going to come in with some, like, factual... some factcheck.org shit on the ethnicity of Jay.
Youngblood is Ricky Romero's son.
Is he?
Yeah.
How did I not know that?
I don't know.
How the hell did I not know that? That's weird.
Oh, I know why, because you don't subscribe to The Observer.
That's right.
So, from Montreal, though. Oh, yeah, and I do need a clip of that, Will, because I'm going to do a gay workout comp.
I actually did a wrestling as gay comp before, so I'm sure I can help you on that.
Yeah.
it was a birthday gift to a friend.
So from Montreal, there's a really good Dino Bravo and Rick Martel match versus Sheik Ali and Jimmy Garvin. Sheik Ali is Stephen Pettipoff in the Maritimes. There's a really good match of Martel as AWA champion versus Jimmy Garvin. Good match with him and Kelly.
Martel and Jimmy Garvin actually had a good feud, so.
Yeah.
All the matches were good.
Kelly and Bob Della Sera teaming against Rick Martel and Prince Alofa, who is a young, skinny Rikishi.
Oh,
and those are the ones that I have as definite recommendations. What's that?
And how many times do the heels come out to Fat Bottom Girls in these matches?
That
happens. That's only Abby's music.
Oh, Abby comes out as a babyface Will to Eye of the Tiger, and it's great.
Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, God. I love Montreal wrestling already. Anyway, now that we take that diversion, but whatever, who gives a shit.
One thing I was wondering is, what do you guys have as your number one for the All Japan set?
Okay, if you want to go straight to that, I know me and Will have the same number one, and I'm going to let Will plug it because I talk too much anyway.
Do you, is 6589 Jumbo?
Yep, that's mine.
Are you your number one? Yeah, has to
that's
be.
That's mine.
Has to be. It's one of those matches that actually when I watched it, I was actually more critical of it because of the reputation it's gained over the years, where it's like, hey, is this the de facto number one? And it's after you watch the feud, after you watch the matches that build, after you know the backstory of them being tag partners, of Tenryu being Jumbo's little boy, or what do they call him in Japan?
Young boy.
Young boy, you know, wow. You know the guy who's
crying
after the match.
Actually.
They call him Zandusky's kids. Anyway, continue.
Oh, no.
I'm terrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, is there really a difference? I mean, you know,
not much.
But after you watch that, and then you watch it, and then you see Henry finally I'm going to spoil it. I don't care. If you don't know about the match, then you probably haven't. You're not going to buy the set anyway. So, anyway, you know, Tenryu finally getting the win. You know, Tenryu finally emerging as, you know, the ace. Perfect story. Perfect story. And really represents the guys that are most represented on the set, you know, and builds kind of to this huge peak.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you just said. I mean, coming into it, I agree that that was sort of the match that I think would be perceived as the de facto number one, but that also, to me, my natural inclination in that scenario is to want to be like, all right, is this really the best thing, or is this just what the fucking received wisdom from wrestling gods has told us, you know? And I watched the match, and I actually watched it three times. I watched it in order of everything on the set, and then after I watched the set, even though it was close to the end of the set anyway, I watched it again, and then I watched it with my little brother, who's sort of my brother Devin is sort of my litmus test too, because he doesn't necessarily know the context of all this stuff. So if he, you know, he's a good kind of a good way to look at it from just like the armchair fan's perspective. Not that that's going to affect my overall enjoyment, but it's always interesting to get his take. And across the board, every single time it seemed to get better, not worse. You know, like it's rare that you watch a match more than once, and the second time you watch it, you think it's way better. Or the third, yeah, I thought that match got better every time. Has a great finish. Everything you just described, I totally agree with. There's really only one match that I even considered, you know, when all is said and done, in the discussion with that match, and that was the finals of the '89 Tag League. Nothing else I even considered. That was the only other one that I even had on the docket as something
and,
in the same
you're
league.
Talking, you're talking Tsuruta Yatu versus Tenryu Hansen for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was the only other match that I really thought, okay, this match is you know, at least in the same neighborhood. And that's not a knock on anything else on the set. That's just how good the Jumbo Tenryu match was, in my opinion. You know, the finals of the '89 Tag League, I could see how somebody would have that as number one, too. You know, it has the great story with fucking...
My number two.
Yeah, I mean, that's my number two. And it has a great story with Yatsu's ear and all that crazy... I mean, it's a really, really good match. I think Tenryu and Hansen were an awesome team that really got over, you know, how dickish they were in every setting. I mean... Just really, really, really great match too. That I think built well. So,
yeah, let me jump in there when you talk about Tenryu Hansen, and what Tenryu Hansen as a tag team does is illustrate how bad of a tag team Hansen Brody were.
Totally,
because
true.
Everything that works for Tenryu Hansen, when Brody and Hansen did it, and you know, no offense to Stan Hansen, who you know called Brody his best tag team partner and his favorite guy ever and whatever in his book. That tag team really just kind of ate up their opponents, gave them nothing, and Stan Hansen admits it. But it comes off like two assholes who are just, you know, making sure that they don't get pinned, you know, as leverage for fucking a contract. Whereas with Tenryu and Hansen, you don't have that concern.
I think with Hansen, I think with Hansen, Brody reinforced his worst instincts. You know, like, mm-hmm. and I think you know, Hansen was still great when he was with Brody, just because when you're that good, you're never going to totally suck, no matter who you're with. But it was nowhere near as good. Hansen, the thing about Hansen Tenryu is, and I'm just going to go on to my third match real quick because it ties into this, and I guarantee you, I'll probably be the high voter for this match. But my number three. Is Hansen and Tenryu versus Baba and Kimura. You know, that's my number three, and that's because I thought
tag league as well.
Yes, absolutely. I thought the story of that match, in some ways, was the most intriguing and interesting story to me on any match on the entire set. And the only reason it worked is because Tenryu and Hansen worked overtime to make these old farts' offense look credible. Can you imagine Brody doing that? If you had taken Tenryu out of that match and put Brody in Tenryu's place, that match would have been a fucking abomination. because Brody would not have given them in, even though Bob is his boss, it would have worked out. It would not have come across well. I thought the story of that match with Baba getting taken out early and then fighting back, and then Kavora gets taken out, and Baba's all alone, and Baba's just desperately throwing every bomb he can to try and survive. I thought the whole thing was excellent. I thought a really, really great match. The only minor flaw in it to me is, you know, the offense of the old farts is not the best offense in the world, but
right.
Hansen and Tenru did such a great job putting it over that in a way the fact that their offense wasn't the best worked even more for me, because it just shows you how great Hansen and Tenru were at making those guys look credible at that stage in their careers, which is not easy, you know. So I was really, really high on that. That's my number three. But, Dave, what was your top couple matches?
Yeah, I love 6589. I would agree with everything you guys said about it, but there was one match I liked even more, which is Jumbo Tsuruta versus Kerry Von Erich, 2 out of 3 falls.
That's number five match. I can't be mad at you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorite matches I've ever seen. Like, I just read over my review of it, and, like, just even things like in between falls after Kerry had the claw hold on Tsuruta so much, you know, he has his cornerman massaging his head. And then I first saw this match in 2003 when I was really getting into Puro, and I always remembered Jumbo working over his hand to fight off the claw, but I actually think in retrospect I might have only seen the third fall at that point, and or only seen clips of the first two falls. And watching the whole thing together, it's my favorite 2 out of 3 falls match I've ever seen. And just, I don't think you could work 2-3 falls together better than they did in that match.
And, wait to the Portland set.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's
I mean,
not a knock on that match. But
no, I like Kerry Von Erich, but I didn't grow up in Texas. So by the time I saw him was in WWF, and we all know he already had one foot in the grave by that time.
You grew up in Texas? Oh, that's fucked up. I didn't even get that there. I'm sure some other asshole has said that, but that's fucked up.
Oh, man.
I've never heard that joke applied to Kerry Von Erich, and that's fucked up.
Oh, God.
No, but hey, hold on. Dave, you grew up in Texas?
I didn't grow up in Texas.
I thought you just said you grew up in
stuff.
Texas. Oh, you didn't
that?
Grow up, so you didn't see it. Oh.
I didn't grow up in Texas.
I was like, how the fuck do you go from Texas to Canada? Okay, never mind.
And develop the accent. That would have been impressive.
Yeah.
Develop the Canadian accent. You cross the border, and they give you a fucking some maple syrup, a gigantic moose to ride across the border in, and a Canadian accent. That's what you get when you go.
Damn. Okay. That's all making sense.
Kerry Von Erich. Kamala could have quite a match now, right?
So bad. I love that match. But that's a great match. And on the 2 out of 3 falls thing, I think I'm a really big fan of 2 out of 3 falls wrestling. You know, I think when it's done right, it's done really well. And that match is a very, very good logical use of the 2 out of 3 falls stiff, where things that happen in one fall matter in the second fall, and then things that happen in the second fall matter in the third fall, right? I mean, like, that's how it should go. And that's why I mentioned Portland Wrestling, because as Will attest, and Childs, too, if he was on the phone, with Portland Wrestling, 2 out of 3 falls, those falls are not standalone falls. If some shit happens in the first fall, you can bet your ass it's going to matter in the second and third fall too.
Guaranteed. Yeah, guaranteed.
I mean, there's no – I don't think I've ever seen a Portland 2 out of 3 falls match, and they're all pretty much 2 out of 3 falls with a few exceptions. I don't think I've ever seen a Portland 2 out of 3 falls match where something that happened in the first fall didn't have some relevance later down the line.
Agreed.
I mean, it's, as Will says, the most logical wrestling there is, and I think he's right. Not saying it's the very best, but it is the most logical.
Yeah,
it's pretty
up
there, man. It's my favorite wrestling right now.
Yeah.
Current CMLL, you know, like they kind of treat the first two falls almost as an inconvenience sometimes. I love some of the CMLL stuff, but what you're talking about is treating the match as a whole and not just trying to get through the first two falls to set up the third.
Yeah, I mean, that's not how it should be. That's why Kelly versus Jumbo is so great, right? I mean, it's because they don't do that. They don't do some stupid-ass shit where the first two falls are irrelevant. You know, they matter, you know. And Flair, Jumbo, the same way. You know, it matters.
The stuff with Jumbo working over Kerry's hand, like, I think that's the best example of working over a body part that I've ever seen in terms of...
It's pretty darn good.
Grandma, yeah.
I mean, it's up there. It's really good. It's a really good match. I haven't completed my ballot because I'm a lazy ass. But that's good. That's a match that will definitely do well for me. And listen, of the pre 1988 stuff, that's going to be near the top because really with the All Japan set. And this is a topic I think that is definitely, I would imagine both of you guys are going to agree with this, but with the All Japan set, you almost have to break it down into two worlds. You know, I would say you're pre-88. Maybe some people want to set that timeline a little bit farther back, but I would say pre-88 and then post-88 because 88 to 89 has so much insanely good stuff lumped in on top of each other that it is, I mean, it's like it's almost like a set unto itself with so much quality.
Well, it was like reading a page-turner kind of book, you know, like you just don't want to stop watching.
Yeah, I mean, those last few discs were just so easy to get through. And, you know, the stuff before that, it's not that it's bad because it isn't. It's just the degree to which you're hit over the head with the great – I mean, a perfect example, my top three matches are all from 1989. All of them are from 1989. Yeah. And they're all from a relatively small window in 89, from a six-month period, from June to fucking December in my top three matches.
No,
and,
I'm going to agree with you because my number three was the Can-Am's versus Footloose from 6/5/89.
Which will probably be my top ten. Yeah. I mean, that's a...
I won't make a joke about Kerry Von Erich and Footloose either.
Oh, my God. Just full of it today.
Dave, you mentioned the Can-Am's matches earlier, too. So,
I love
which,
those
which,
matches. Every
well, which
one
is
of
your
those
favorite? Which is your favorite?
You caught me as I went to the fridge for water.
Ah, you bastard. No, but I think I agree with Will, but all of them are good.
I think...
one, I think, is 10-20-89.
See, I'm going to completely disagree with you. Okay, now we're going to fight. All right. Texas-Canadian standoff right here. Okay. Here's the deal. When you look at 6-5-89...
Leo Burke.
you know there's no fucking chance in hell that Leo Burke's winning that shit. I might even find a Leo Burke-Dusty Rhodes squash match somewhere, you know, where Dusty beats him with the elbow in, like, 32 seconds. And, like, 12 seconds was him getting his robe off.
From Leo Burke.
Literally be, like, 12 seconds of Dusty taking his robe off, 7 seconds of, like, Leo Burke charging, getting hit with a couple of elbows over the head, fucking falls on his ass, Dusty bounces off the ropes, hits the bionic, 1, 2, 3, doesn't even hook the fucking leg because it's fucking Leo Burke. Okay, let's keep that in check right now. All right.
I'm sure Dusty could even squeeze in some time to father some awkward children in that, too.
While he's grabbing fucking Crystal Gale's hair. That motherfucker doesn't give a fuck. All right.
Oh, lovely.
All right. Anyway. But, no, the thing I thought about that series of matches is that I clearly thought the first one was the best. The second one and the third one built off the first one a little bit, but they all kind of exist in their own vacuum. They all have their own little stories within the matches themselves. But I think what really hurts the matches as they go on, and I don't know why the crowds react to it, but it was the crowd reaction. The crowd reaction as you got to that third match really hurt it, in my view. It's like one of the, and I'm not a big crowd reaction guy. I don't give a fuck what 20,000 or 10,000 Japanese people think. You know, I give a fuck what I think. You know? But no, seriously, I mean, you know, to me, the crowd not giving a shit as the match, like, the first one, the crowd was kind of hot the whole way through. The second one, the crowd got into it as it went through. And the third one, it's like, man, I wish this crowd gave a shit. you know, and maybe they did. Maybe I mean, it's been 2 years since I've seen those matches. That just just what I remember. Stan, you got to remember, I completed my ballot before I ever sent one set out to anyone else. So, you know, I'm going all on memory here.
I also like the Ken Ames versus Kobashi and Malenko too.
Great match, yeah.
Very good match. I totally agree with that. Kobashi, I think, actually was in a way better than I expected. Not that I expected him to be bad, but he was better than I expected in the glimpses we saw of him. You know, that's just me. I was kind of expecting him to be more for flaws to be more evident, and they weren't. You know, he seemed, you know, like a natural, you know, Barry Windham, Owen Hart type, where you give them, right away, you give them their first chance, and they're just such good athletes that they're immediately really good. No real downtime in between. But. One match.
I actually have it.
Number
three. Number three, I have 10-11-89, Jumbo versus Tenryu. I thought that was really underrated.
10-11-89. Which one was that?
It was another Triple Crown match between the two guys, between Jumbo and Tenryu.
Oh, okay. Let me look up while y'all are rambling. Let me look and see where I had that.
I had that at number three, and then I had their 1987 match at number five.
The 87 match a good bit.
I had 10-11-89 like at 34. So,
ooh.
Still like one of my. This is a loaded set. Like Dylan said, after you get past your top 10, literally numbers 11 through 50 could be switched. And
after number three, I'm at a fucking loss. Because you've got. I mean, I'll give you a match we haven't mentioned, Tenryu versus Hansen, where Hansen busts open Tenryu before the match starts, right?
Was that July 27th of 1988?
I believe it was.
Because I have that at number seven.
That is one of my favorite. See, with a set like this, there's so much good stuff, you almost have to go on the stuff that you remember the most memorable things. And that match really stands out to me as one of the most memorable matches on the set, because I'm a big fan of matches that have clear stories where one guy is clearly pacing ahead of the other, and a guy has to build a comeback gradually over the course of the match. That's what that whole match is about. I mean, Hansen ambushes him before the bell.
Yep.
It's the same reason I like the 89 old man tag, because the old men get ambushed before the bell, and they're forced to come back. It's the same reason that the tag final the tag league match with Kawada getting his leg destroyed in 88 is so great. You know, because you've got these guys who have to fight back from a clear disadvantage.
Or Yatsu getting his head beat the fuck in on that 12-6-89 match.
That's the prevailing trend to me with a lot of these matches that I think are so great, is there's somebody in the match that gets ambushed, or they come in hurt, or something happens, and either somebody has to go it alone, or the whole match is about that other person desperately trying to find a way to win. You know, that's how All Japan created drama, and they did it so great. And that match, to me, with Tenryu and Hansen, and Tenryu getting ambushed and all the blood loss, is one of the most memorable matches on the entire set. You know, I mean, there are other matches that you might say might be better in certain aspects from bell to bell, but they don't stand out as much as that match does. You know, that stands out really as an upper tier match to me.
Yeah, no, this is my description of it in one sentence. Blood, violence, human spirit, determination, sadistic fucks, and a holy fuck lariat.
when did we start talking about my honeymoon?
Oh, God.
What do you mean? You're on your honeymoon? No. Dude, it went right over my head, man.
And periodically hits Dave with a lariat. You know, Dave.
Yeah.
You know, we got two. I got two commies on the phone here. You know, Dave just went to Cuba. Will.
Nice.
So he's experienced.
How was the motherland? That's all I want to know.
Experienced it. Yeah.
It was awesome.
What was so awesome about Cuba? Tell me. To somebody who, you know, can go somewhere that I am not allowed to go, tell me.
Well, it was beautiful and warm, which I guess you guys probably experienced a little more than me. But it was right on the ocean. right on the ocean. And honestly, we did an excursion to the Bay of Pigs, and it was great because they all down the highway they had all these billboard posters with Castro and the soldiers thrusting the rifles up in the air, and you know, talking about it showed this picture of, you know, marching the Guatemalan mercenaries and with their with handcuffs and hoods over their heads, and just such a surreal world, you know. Because, I mean, I live in Canada, but let's admit it, you know, we are run by America as far as the people are. So, you know, I've grown up with the American perspective, and, you know, we talked a lot about the politics and the history with the tour guides on the way down, and it was really cool. I managed to pick up a couple of books by Castro, one by Shea, and Shea's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Okay. It's probably not totally commercialized. But anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no. Well, it's that too, but yeah, it's pretty cool stuff down there. So, and just a beautiful, beautiful place, great people. And all I can think is they really need to set up some good wrestling fed there, because you could really feed into the nationalism.
That's great. Well, shit, man.
Great American heel.
Cuban Wrestling Federation, make it happen. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. The fuck, why not? But anyway, getting back to All Japan after that brief detour, but I did want to put over Dave's Cuba visit to Will because they're both commies. But the one match that we haven't mentioned that is probably my favorite match of all time is, you know, the Terry Funk Stan Hansen chokeout match. Like, that's probably my single favorite match I've ever seen in my life. You know, it won't be number one on the set because I don't think it's the best match on the set, you know. But it is absolutely a brutal, nasty, disgustingly violent affair. You know, you've got Terry Funk, and what I really love about that match, too, is Terry Funk's stubbornness and refusing to try and win any other way than the spinning toe hold is the reason he gets his ass kicked. he doesn't even want to attempt anything else. He keeps getting going to the spinning toe hold, and every time he does, Hansen beats the shit out of him, fucking busts his face open, gets him on the floor, and then chokes him out with a rope and streamers all over his body. It's got this awesome visual. The crowd's going fucking insane. And then to top it off, Dory Funk Jr. runs in looking like a calculus teacher at your local high school with his kid up on, runs in the ring to make the save. And it really, I mean, to me, watching Dory Funk run in, it literally, I felt like I was watching my dad run in trying to save, like, his brother or something, you know, like, this, like, goofy-looking old guy comes jumping in the ring, with his odd get-up and math school attire and starts throwing punches. So that's one of my favorite matches on the entire set in terms of quality. But it's my favorite match probably of all time that I've ever seen. And I think it really gets over how great a heel Hansen was and how great a babyface Funk was.
I can't even argue with that.
Heel there. I really liked his match against Giant Baba in February of 82. It was shortly after Hansen had arrived there, and it just felt like these, you know, guys from the two rival promotions, you know, just colliding, and a dream match, and kind of the feel that you might get when The Rock and Cena wrestle at WrestleMania. You know, just like, wow, this is finally happening, and they just unleashed on each other, and Baba actually looked good, which is really cool to me.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, Will, what did you think of the Hansen-Baba matches compared to the Hansen-Inoki matches from New Japan? Because if I remember correctly, Will liked the Hansen-Inoki matches better than a lot of other people did.
I did, but New Japan was like light years ago, man. But I don't remember liking them nearly as much as the Hansen. Like with Hansen-Baba, when we were putting the set together, it was like, okay, yeah, this one's definitely nominated, but will it make the set? And then when we were putting the set together, it's like, well, fuck, man, I don't want to take any of the Hansen-Baba matches now. Because what a fun feud. And what a clear case of, like, this American knows who the fuck is writing the checks. You know, because, man, I mean, really, does anyone make Baba look better than Stan Hansen?
No.
I mean, anyone, you know. And I like Baba. I'm a Baba guy. You know, I know, like, my good friend Rob Naylor hates Baba, you know. Fucking other people roll their eyes at him. You know, big goofy fuck with skinny arms, no chest, whatever. But does anyone make Baba look better than Stan Hansen? No way. Not even close. You know?
Yeah.
So
I agree with that. I like the Hansen and Inoki matches. I think they're good matches. I like the Hansen Baba matches. I don't think I like either series as much as other people do. But what I would want to point out is that I think it's pretty fucking great and a testament to how awesome Stan Hansen is that he had series with both the bosses that were that good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's,
agreed.
You know, because Inoki could be a lazy fucker, as we all know. And Giant Baba, who I like better than most, is not a guy who physically at that point in his career was going to set the world on fire. So the fact that Hansen could have series that good, whether you think they were merely good or great, is almost irrelevant. Because just the fact that he was able to get that you know, matches that good with those guys is impressive. You know?
Yeah. Baba is a guy who had physical limitations by that point, but still knew what he was doing and really tried. And, you know, you could get behind him, whereas Inoki was a guy with a lot of physical gifts, but he was just an idiot.
Well, when you're the boss, why do you have to work hard? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Yeah,
I think
except
with Inoki,
ego.
You know, I think with I think with Inoki, he definitely, you know, I think Baba definitely, after watching both the New Japan and the All Japan sets, to me, I will never consider Inoki a better worker than Giant Baba ever again, ever. You know, like, and I didn't even have to sit through all the stuff from Inoki, you know, in the nominations process, you know, when the committee was going through it. And I imagine it was horrible.
You thought the best Inoki matches.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you know, you look at something like Inoki versus Andre, which I know Will hated and didn't want on the New Japan set. But if you look at something like Inoki versus Andre, okay, Andre was way past his prime already. Really, that was really the beginning of his total physical deterioration. And yet, I remember watching that match and thinking, God, Andre's doing everything he can to make this match good, but Inoki's just fucking terrible. I mean, like, when a guy who is in his physical decline that is that big, and obviously a physical decline for him is going to be more severe than it would be for the average person, when that guy is putting forth more effort than you, that does not speak well to you. As a fucking guy who gives a shit about what he's doing, you know, and that was like the kind of the last straw for me ever thinking that Inoki was really a world class wrestler.
Kind of bummed me out that Andre wasn't one of those guys that kind of jumped all Japan, you know.
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
What could Andre have done there?
or at least maybe he could have done it earlier than some of that night.
No, because that might have deprived us of Andre Khan and Andre Hansen and Japan.
And the awesome tag match with him, his interaction with Hoshino, which is one of the funniest things on the whole set.
Fucking one of the greatest things ever, yeah.
So, no way I would want to be deprived of that, any of that for that matter. But, yeah, so. Another question for the group here. How do you guys look at, you know, obviously there's not as much junior heavyweight wrestling in All Japan that made the set. You know, as there was with New Japan. Although, to be fair, with New Japan, a lot of it was matches that I think the committee felt had to go on because of historic value. They didn't even necessarily like the matches. But
there was some of that, but then once Liger comes in the picture, that all changes.
Yes, that's a good point. I don't want to oversell that. But
yeah,
what I was gonna ask is, obviously, stylistically, they're two different junior heavyweight styles. I mean, I think that's evident if you watch the two sets, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you prefer, the All Japan style of junior heavyweight wrestling? And if you do, why? You know,
let me say this. One, look at some of the guys like Saito, Hiro Saito.
Yes.
And then Kobayashi. They're on both sets. So,
yep.
I mean, they're really guys that jump from New Japan to All Japan. I mean, because All Japan juniors really is Suchi and the Malinkos, right?
Basically,
I mean,
yes.
Who else? I mean, and then Tiger Mask, I guess,
well,
right? I mean,
yeah, there's the attempt at Tiger Mask, but he ends up being better as a heavyweight, right?
But you know, I mean, New Japan Juniors wrestling is where it's at. There's a reason that, you know, and there's maybe it's a shame that All Japan never really invested in junior weights, but like I said, they really had Fuchi and they didn't give a shit, you know. So I don't know, I'm gonna go with New Japan, man. Liger. I mean, Liger was like one of the best wrestlers on that fucking New Japan set, so why wouldn't I want to watch more of his matches? Even though Fuchi's one of my favorites, which I mentioned earlier.
Although some people find, you know, the Tiger Mask versus Dynamite Kid match is a little disappointing. You go back before that.
But then you got, hold on. I'm going to interrupt you there. But then you had Fujinami, the junior weight. I didn't fucking think about him. Give me a fucking break. You had Hoshino. You had fucking Gran Hamada and Babyface. You know, I mean, come on.
Babyface match was great.
If you want to say the worst of New Japan juniors wrestling versus the best of All Japan juniors wrestling, okay, I'll go All Japan. I'll watch fucking Masafuchi any day of the week over another Tiger Mask match. That's 20 here.
My point was going to be that I actually, one of the things I like about All Japan Juniors, even though I think you definitely have more overall volume for sure, and the high quality matches are better in New Japan, but I, in a way, the All Japan Juniors matches are very similar to the Fujinami era New Japan Juniors matches, you know, as opposed to being matches about executing high spots very, very fastly and maybe appropriately if you're lucky, which is what you got during the Tiger Mask era, you know. Your matches,
is that a word, very, very fastly?
Very quickly. Fast, I don't know. I'm from the South. I'm from South Carolina. We're 49th in education. But they,
but hold on. Texas might be 50th. So, you know.
That's true.
Or but, no, wait. No. I think we're both better than Mississippi.
We are definitely better than Mississippi, which is saying nothing at all. But, you know, the thing is, they come across, you know, your matches with Momoto and Fuchi, or you know, a match like that. That feels like a Fujinami title defense from 1980. You know, that's what I liked about those matches, is they came across like the Fujinami era junior heavyweight matches. You know,
Roberts match too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm just, you know. To me, after watching both the New Japan and All Japan sets, I think Fujinami was the best wrestler in Japan in the 80s. You know, to me, he's my number one guy from Japan during the 1980s. So that's, you know.
Even above Shinryu?
Yes. If you press me to make a decision, yes. You know, I mean,
Fujinami was my number one guy on the New Japan set. And I know other people think Fujiwara, I don't argue with that, you know, that's their personal preference. To me, Fujinami was by far number one on the New Japan set. But God, and I know, I mean, and my good buddy Phil Schneider always calls Jumbo the Terry Taylor of All Japan, which is the fucking bad shit.
It's a funny line.
And I love Phil, and I will preface this before I insult Phil. I'll preface this by saying nobody has exposed me to more great wrestling than Phil Schneider. Bar none, nobody on this earth has said, watch this match because it's fucking great, Will, and I've agreed with them. I mean, okay, so having said that, it's the dumbest fucking statement I've ever fucking heard. Okay, now, I guarantee you Jumbo would have gotten the Red Rooster over too. Fuck this.
And that's from a man from the same state as George W. Bush, so that carries a lot of weight.
Fujinami, like, but here's the thing about Fujinami, okay? He was great in junior heavyweight. He was great in tags. You know, he was great down the road. Where I would put Fujinami over Tenryu would be that I like Fujinami's, you know, look, Fujinami doesn't have any singles match I've seen as good as the best Tenryu singles match, for sure, okay? But Fujinami does have a very broad volume of good matches, and his stuff early in the decade I like better than Tenryu's stuff early in the decade by a fairly large margin. You know, like
see, I disagree with that. I'm Like, I love a lot of that early Tenryu stuff, so.
You know, and that's, well, again, that's not a knock on Tenryu, though. I mean, that's not, I don't want to, you know, because I could clearly see a case for Tenryu over Fujinami. It's not, it by no means would I think it unreasonable or bizarre for somebody to rate Tenryu over Fujinami. None. I think those are, you know, those guys are right there. And then if you're talking all time, I think you could definitely build a case for Tenryu over Fujinami because all the stuff Tenryu did after All Japan. So,
right.
Yeah. You're, but that's, you know, just the way I look at it. But I like Fujinami's singles junior run a lot, you know, a whole lot, probably more than most people do. I thought all those matches were good. And if you go back to the late 70s, you find even more good stuff, you know, so.
Well, and then you also, you throw in Fujinami's series with Choshu. I thought that was all great.
Great series. Great series. Yeah, you know, yes, absolutely. All these guys are great. Yeah, I mean, you're really splitting hairs to some degree when you start comparing these guys because you can make a case, I think, for Fujiwara, for Fujinami, for Choshu even, depending on what you look for in your wrestling, you know, for Tenryu, for Jumbo. You make a case for all these motherfuckers as the best Japanese guys of the 80s. I like every single one of them. I don't think it would be unrealistic for any of those guys to be your number one best guy from the 1980s. Now, here's a non let the good times roll question. Okay, we talked about some of the best stuff. We talked about a lot of the wrestlers. We talked about, you know, some of the feuds and stuff. Our series is on the set. What is the worst match on the All Japan set, in your opinion?
Well, I'm going to go first, just because I put the fucking thing together. So fuck yeah. But easily, maybe not even easily, but Jumbo versus Brody from 3/27/18.
I knew you were going to say that.
Fucking embarrassment of a match. And it's really the only match. I mean, the other match, every other match on there, even the matches in my bottom 10, like, were just matches that didn't excite me, but I didn't think were actively bad or embarrassing, you know? That was the only match I disagree. And that was a Chris Z personal pick. Hey, Chris, what's up? But I'm just saying, it really was. It was the only match. It was one of those things where Childs and I were in agreement, like, yo, this match does not belong on the set. You're fucking up. And Chris was just like, well, I'm not from Mississippi either, you know, and you know, fucking, you know, that was his only defense. He was from Georgia.
It did have a great moment at the end with the cheering for Brody, but it was painful leading up to that.
Well, what's your pick, Dave? What's your 150?
Giant Bob versus Harley Race, September 4th, 1980. I remember watching that and thinking it was dog shit.
I didn't hate Race versus Baba, but I, you know, I think there's two of them on the set, but that'll be near the bottom of my list. It's not going to be, it won't be the dead end last, but it'll.
I loved both of those Race Baba matches, so fuck both of you.
just,
I like Harley Race though. I don't have any problem with Harley.
I like Harley Race too. I'm not a, he's the modern day Kurt, or he's the ancient Kurt Angle guy. That's not my gimmick. So, by no means. I mean, there's a.
Yeah,
there's a fucking
bad jokes, remember?
That's right. See, we all comes full circle here on the Wrestling Culture Podcast. But you know, I don't.
My favorite Race match on there was actually him and Flair versus 84. I thought that was really good.
Well, that was a great fucking match too.
Yeah,
that was just amazing match. I mean, and you know what? I know you're on the negative trip right now, Dylan. You want us to dog the All Japan set, but I'm going to talk about Ric fucking Flair.
Okay. Go ahead.
To me, this is another set that just proves when people hold Flair in such high regard, this is why. When you can be on every fucking set that we've put out, maybe not everyone, but he was on Memphis. He was on Mid-South, right? He was on All Japan. He was on, not, was he on New Japan? He wasn't on New Japan, right? Never worked New Japan, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's out of New Japan. He was on Texas. He's going to be on Portland, He's going to be on the AWA set.
Yep.
He's I already mentioned Memphis. Obviously, he's going to be all over Crockett, you know. The territories, he's going to be all over
the territories.
Tons of stuff
in the other territories. Yeah, you're going to have tons of stuff in the other territories.
Did he ever go to Canada?
Toronto. I have one really good match from Toronto with him.
What's that?
Him and Dewey Robertson against Piper and Snuka at Maple Leaf Gardens in 1980 or 1981.
Oh, okay. You know what? I might actually hold on.
You've watched that, Will. You reviewed it.
I did, right? And I did.
Yep.
I nominated it for the territories or Mid-Atlantic set. But yeah, this is a guy that clearly went everywhere, and you could say, yeah, he just went on tour with the Ric Flair show. Complete bullshit. You know, does he do a lot of the same things? Yes, but so does every other fucking wrestler. Buddy Rose fell through the ropes. You know, but really, I mean, whatever.
Yep.
He had his thing. Fucking Bockwinkel had his thing. Jumbo had his thing. I mean, they all had their things. Tenryu had his thing. You know, some people would criticize his enziguri. I don't find anything wrong with it whatsoever, but whatever. But the point is that Flair did it better than almost anybody in more places. And it's not even debatable. I mean, what a fucking great wrestler to be able to come in to All Japan and wrestle Jumbo and Tenryu and Harley Race in Japan and get over and have exciting matches, and then go to fucking Texas one day and fucking shoot a promo on Kerry Von Erich and then fucking wrestle a 2 out of 3 falls match there, then go to Memphis and do a fucking 15-minute studio match with fucking Jerry Lawler, and then fucking a few months later wrestle fucking Coco Beware and put him over like $1 million, then go back to fucking Texas, then go back to fucking Portland, then go to fucking the AWA and do a fucking match with Magnum and do the Torn Magnum match. Whatever, dude. Fucking Ric Flair is one of the fucking greatest, and it needs to be said, and people just need to accept that Ric Flair deserves top 3 billing up there with guys like Jumbo, Fujinami, Tenryu, you know, when it was
those four. I mean, I think
the best
absolutely.
Wrestler of the 80s.
Absolutely. I think it's easy to slag Flair, but I think the reason it's so easy to slag Flair is because we have so much Flair. You know, Flair, I think, is a victim because we've seen so much stuff that it's easier to pick apart his flaws. Well, perhaps the reason we've seen so much Ric Flair is because Ric Flair is so goddamn good, everybody wanted to book him. Maybe that's his. So basically, the criticism of Flair boils down to he was good. Right? I mean, that's the criticism of Flair is he was so good that every territory wanted to fucking book him. So he's going to have matches that don't necessarily differentiate from the very, you know, I mean, so the fuck what? Yes, he had a routine, okay? But he didn't use the exact same routine in every match. That's a total fucking lie. Yeah, you know, I mean, if you look, like, if you watch his match versus Magnum from Portland or his match versus Magnum from, Super Clash in the AWA, because, again,
sure.
I'm watching the AWA and Portland stuff, you could find similarities. They ain't the same match. They are absolutely not the same match. They are different,
right.
You know. And if you watch, you know, even the two Jumbo matches, or the Jumbo match, they're different matches. You know?
Yeah, or
the three
carry matches, the title loss, then the rematch, and then when he wins it back in All Japan.
I mean, the thing is, me and Will don't even like the cage match from Dallas. From the Freebirds angle. I think that's not a very good match. But
match.
You know, it's irrelevant because it's funny to me that the Flair matches that get criticized, you know, for formula or whatever, and there's a lot of them that do. Nobody ever puts thought into that fact that part of the reason that formula is something that is so obvious when it does peak up is because we've seen so much of him in so many different settings against so many guys.
What the fuck are you doing?
That's either of you?
What the hell is that?
We might have another crank caller.
Really? I hope that's the
the same guy that accused us of communism in his Killer Carl Krupp voice last time. But whatever.
I bet money that it is, actually.
But whatever the fuck. I don't give a fuck.
And you can't mute those motherfuckers or what?
Well, I don't know that I'd want to. I kind of got a kick out of it.
But the fucking point is
Matt Joe is on the call. Oh, you know what? I wonder if that's Justin Shapiro who's been doing that shit. I don't even know the guy, really. But anyways.
Does he have something against you?
What we were talking about? We were talking about Ric Flair being the god.
Yes, we're talking about Ric Flair being the best. But anyway, yeah, Ric Flair, good wrestler. That's the point.
And the thing is like, it's one thing to go back and watch all these matches and think that he had a routine. You know what? People in that day were not watching all the matches, unless you were a tape trader. So the fact that the routine was so universal and worked so well everywhere, and, you know, it's pretty remarkable, really.
Yeah. Oh, you're not going to get any fucking argument from me. Shit.
Yeah, fucking Flair.
You know what else was great was Jumbo Lewis' sixth place. Not do any segue at all. You guys hear okay?
Yeah, sounded like you're at the Indianapolis 500, but it's okay. What the fuck that was about?
Yeah, I'm gonna see if there's someone. I'm gonna mute anyone else who's on the line because someone's fucking.
Yeah, mute them. In the meantime, I'm gonna fucking say that the one guy on the All Japan set that I actually think you could make a case. There's guys on the set you see where you could see they're developing into being that they're going to be really, really good wrestlers, or they are really, really, really good wrestlers. But I think one of the most interesting guys to watch for me also was Kawada, because Kawada was early in his career in a tag team that wasn't necessarily pushed at the very top of the cards, kind of a work rate wrestler in some ways. You know, not a fucking Davey Richards, but you know, a guy that you know. His matches, they're more high spots than you would expect from a Kawada match if you'd seen him through the prism of his 1990s career, you know? And it's interesting to see how he evolved from being a guy teaming with Fuyuki and basically almost quasi-blowjob babyface tag team into being, you know, this fucking grizzled veteran with no goddamn teeth kicking people in the head. Like,
hold on. I'm going to interrupt you here. And forgive me, but weren't fucking Fuyuki and Kawada, weren't they like bad guys?
They were, or at least at times they were. But I'm talking about the overall look and how they worked. I mean, Fuyuki would work face and peril segments in certain matches, right? Kawada, what I mean by blowjob babyface is not necessarily the fucking, you know, little girl screaming for him per se.
Because this was the tag team. Hold on. This was the tag team that got the Can-Ams cheered in fucking Japan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But my point is they wrestled like when the bell rang, they were comparable to me in a lot of ways to a fucking Rock and Roll Express. They were not comparable to Ole and Arn Anderson. They were not comparable to the Russians. They were not comparable to – I don't even think – to me, they were closer to the Rock and Rolls than they were to the Midnights in terms of how the matches were structured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kawada, not saying he wasn't a tough guy or a bruiser or a fucking whatever at that point, but that did not seem like a dominant – if you had come to me and if I was a wrestling fan, you know, a hardcore fan in 88 or 89, and somebody had come to me and said – Kawada's going to be this fucking guy. They're going to call him Dangerous K. He's going to be known for his kicks and these crazy violent matches. I would have been, yeah, you're fucking retarded. There's no chance of that shit's going to happen. You know,
he's going to make Tenryu look cheery. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I never would have believed that.
You know, he it's like a totally different, you know, not a totally different, but a totally different turn than you would think if you just knew Kawada from the 90s. That's my
right.
point. You know,
okay.
you wouldn't think, based on his 80s work, that he would be that guy from the 90s.
Okay.
You would not think it would be the same guy, you know.
Sure.
And I thought Kawada was better on the set than Misawa was. Not a knock against Misawa, really, but, you know, that's just me.
Well,
yeah,
that,
I did too. Okay, go.
Tenryu and Kawada versus Hanson and Gordy. I mean, that's such a great babyface performance by Kawada.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one of those matches, like we said, where somebody gets hurt, has to fucking play, come back, got to find a way to win. And the thing about All Japan that's so great is the guys that, you know, the standard storytelling rule would be, okay, the babyface does come back and they do find a way to win. Well, not in All Japan. You know, if you get your fucking leg decimated, you're probably not going to win the match. The match is going to be about you trying to get that point, you know, fucking fighting spirit, but in a way that is compelling, not this bullshit where you kick out of 14 tiger drivers on the floor or whatever the fuck, you know, like actual
right.
compelling use of that. You know, not that there's anything wrong with a high spot, because La Feria versus Tiger Mask 2 is like one of my favorite matches on the set, and it's a pretty crazy
right.
match in terms of big spots, but...
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of match that develops where somebody gets their ass kicked and has to make a fucking comeback, and that's, you know, and you're wondering, can they even survive? Because in that match, is Kawada going to actually be able to survive to compete in the match, right? It's not even so much can Kawada win. It's can Kawada survive and have use of his legs? You know, and the same thing again with that match I like with the old men. It's not so much can Baba Gamora win the match, or it kind of morphs into that somewhat toward the end, but it's did Baba just have a catastrophic heart attack? can Gamora compete by himself with, you know, Baba dying on the floor of coronary failure?
Actually, I think I saw that happen with Tatanka in the live show.
Will, Dave spent about $250,000 last night to go to a wrestling show to see Tatanka and Billy Gunn.
Oh, my goodness, why?
I thought I was going to see Chris Masters live, but all he did was Master Lock Challenge.
Well, that's fucked up.
It is.
I'd be upset about that.
Should ask you
a lot of matches. There's a lot of matches with a former WWE guy versus an Ontario guy. Basically, it was almost the whole show, and some of it was okay. Some of it was just much longer than it needed to be, like Tatanka versus Boris Brezhnev, or Bushwhacker Luke versus Bolin.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel kind of genuinely bad for you now, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but he did need to go to Cuba, so, you know.
I did. And there's two matches last night that masked him out in it, too. Because so. Bushwhacker Luke pulled down his opponent's tights and bit his ass. And one of the flatliners was flexing against Billy Gunn, and he was down on his knees flexing, and Billy Gunn turned around and mooned him and shoved his ass right in his face. So, I don't know. I guess they think that's what Ontario's into.
Well, I mean, after the fucking Montreal footage you were just telling us about, maybe that's what all Canada's, you know, into.
Yeah.
You got,
I mean,
you know,
we allow gay marriage here, so.
You got fucking Rick Martel and his Careless Whisper video, right? I mean, shit.
Yeah. I just emailed that to you too, Will, by the way.
I'm gonna have to watch that.
It's pretty great. And I think it's actually made even better by the overdubbed French commentary.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's really great. It's one of my favorite, I can't believe this ever happened, wrestling finds. Well, I guess Dave found it, but whatever.
Oh,
is there...
Yeah. the other thing as far as live wrestling goes, Will, is I did get to see Finley versus Harry Smith 2 weeks ago, too. So that was pretty awesome.
Oh, wow. How was that? How did that end up?
It was really good. It was, like, really, really fun to watch live, and I got to meet Harry Smith, really nice guy. That was really good, and it was a really good show all together. So.
Also, I should note that I went out to my mailbox a couple of days ago, and I've got you know, a fucking Canadian envelope. You know, I get it, and I'm thinking, shit, I hope Musgrave didn't send me anything from Cuba violating the Trading with the Enemy Act. Fucking Jesse Helms' ghost is going to come to my door and kill me. So I open it up, and I pull out a signed Smith Hart 8x10, and he's with two signed to me, and he's wearing, you know, the Canadian Hitmen jersey, right? So I take it in the house and I'm laughing my ass off, and I put it in
jersey signed by Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Which he pointed out to me when I was asking him which one I should buy. He goes, well, this one has my brother's shirt signed by him.
So I promptly take it and I put it on my mantle right next to the ashes of my dead father-in-law, which, of course, thankfully my wife has a good sense of humor. She's like, oh, my God. You know, but she thought it was kind of funny. So it's sitting up there with my the remains of my deceased father-in-law, God rest his soul, or nitrogen ball of gas, rest his soul, depending on your religious views. And I'm sitting there looking at this, looking at this thing, and my daughter comes up to me and she's like, Daddy, that guy is really creepy looking. What's the story with that? And I tell her, you know, oh, well, that's Bret Hart's, that's Bret Hart's brother, and he was a wrestler, and he's a wrestling promoter, blah, blah, blah. My friend Dave said it to me. She says, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but who cares? I'm not Canadian. There's no possibility that I'm going to get any shit over this. And she says, is he handicapped? She was dead serious. Like, there was no trying to be joking or funny. She was like, is he handicapped? And, of course, I laughed, which was, you know, the wrong message to teach kids. You know, you don't want to teach them to laugh at people that are lesser able. But whatever.
What she should have said is, like, no, but his entire family is.
Nobody's on the verge. Yeah.
No, but they performed in front of handicapped people every night at the Calgary, whatever the fuck, if you believe Bret Hart's book. So, yeah. But anyway, any other thoughts on the All Japan set? Anything else we didn't cover that you guys wanted to mention?
Billy Robinson versus Nick Bockwinkel was awesome.
Oh yeah, that is a good match. Actually, you know, and Bockwinkel again, another guy that's gonna, I think, really shine on the AWA set, obviously. And I'll make a plug here about that in a second, but.
Actually, Bockwinkel versus Terry Funk was awesome too.
Yeah, Bockwinkel versus Jumbo. But I mean, to me, Bockwinkel, the matches that were selected, I thought were really good. I know Will has said that if you sit through some of it, it doesn't. You know, there are Bockwinkel matches that you really want were like fuck. But the
just so boring, so boring. I mean, and we were talking about sitting in rest holds for a while. It'd be really rough sitting through some of those Bockwinkel matches, man. I mean, you know, I mean, 4-minute abdominal stretches, you know.
but you would agree that the matches that made the set were awfully good, obviously. I mean,
absolutely, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, I like Bockwinkel in AWA a lot more than I like him in All Japan. So,
yeah.
But,
and I think, you know, to segue a little bit and just drop a line about the AWA set, which will hopefully be coming out next year, I guess. I don't know exactly what the plan on that is. Depends on when we finish watching the footage. But Bockwinkel, there is a match that I know Phil Schneider loves, and I know Will loves, and I know Chris Zellner has seen it now loves too. And it's, you know, I've mentioned it before, Bockwinkel versus Wahoo McDaniel. When people see this match from the AWA set, it is going to fucking floor them. It is as good a singles match as you will see from anywhere. Not saying it's the best singles match of all time, but it is as good a singles match as you will see from anywhere in the world in the 1980s. And I don't think that's an exaggeration.
I think it only took me an hour and a half to think of this, but there are two people on this All Japan set that people should look out for, and that's John Tenta and Kabuki.
Yeah, yes.
Kabuki is another guy. While I really liked him in Texas, but even better in All Japan. And John Tenta, holy shit! Wow, that guy can wrestle in Japan.
Yes,
yeah,
I agree.
I was going to mention him too.
So those are two guys to look out for. I just wanted to throw that
in. I definitely agree on both of those camps. Tenta is a, you know, a lot of guys I think are fans of fat guys that are agile. That's like almost a niche favorite of all wrestling fans. And I don't think Tenta, for whatever reason, gets forgotten in the fat guys that are agile camp. You know, he's not like necessarily the first name that comes to mind, but he was a fat guy who was agile.
Yeah, but part of that, I'm just going to say it's because he wasn't as good as other agile fat guys overall.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
I mean, that's why. That's why he gets left out. Because, well, let's be honest, he wasn't that great compared to some of the greats. You know, your fucking
sure.
Vaders. And,
no, he's
know.
Not Vader. He's not Bigelow. I do think, you know, I think he's a guy that definitely people would like, and another fat, you know, Jerry Blackwell in the AWA set's going to hit is another fat guy that's agile that people are going to like. So, yeah,
right.
Tenta is a fat man who can move for sure, and be very entertaining in the process of a match. So that's a good guy to point out, because I'd totally forgotten about that too. And Kabuki is really good.
There's a little bit of him from Vancouver as well.
From where?
From Vancouver.
Oh, Al Tomko is a
wonderful
promotion. Sure.
Oh, okay. Well,
I mean,
I'll let you get that footage, Dave.
I'll take that over ICW. Over some oldie ICW, I should say.
Sure. Yeah, but
that's pretty bad. That will probably be an 80s promotion that never makes an 80s set.
we won't have a 15 disc ICW set. That won't make the cut. So that's all.
Yeah,
right.
who is their big fucking star? The gorilla looking motherfucker.
Who?
Tom Brandy.
Tony Atlas was there for a while, wasn't he?
No, oh, come on, man. I wasn't talking about black people. Fucking racist. God damn it. Dylan, no, man. That's the fucking hairy, fucking horrible wrestler.
Angelo
Mosca? There you go.
Oh God, that guy's bad.
There's some great. Oh man, and I can't even talk about Angelo Mosca with Dave on the line. I can't.
there's like a horrible match with him versus Jimmy Snuka.
Well, no shit, because he's in it. God, what a horrible, horrible fucking wrestler.
Speaking of Jimmy Snuka, before we go anywhere, I'm going to point out that is the actual worst match on the set, is Jimmy Snuka and Ricky Steamboat, period.
No, there's nothing against Jumbo fucking...
I don't even think it's close. Ricky Steamboat and Jimmy Snuka was the only match I've watched on any 80s set that I've seen where I watched it and thought, God damn, all three people like this? And I respect Dale's opinion. But the phoniest looking bumps from Snuka, I hated that fucker. Like, that might have been as good as the 12th best Roadkill and Danny Doring versus C.W. Anderson and Billy Wiles match I saw from ECW. Maybe.
Yeah.
But that's the only match on the set I felt that way about. Yeah, the whole set was loaded. And that's the only real match on the set. Even the Brody Jumbo match you don't like, that's probably my bottom five, and I didn't like it. But compared to, you know, New Japan or even Texas, where there's several matches where I was like, fuck, I really don't like this match at all. That's really the only match on the All Japan set where I was like, I don't like this at all. So One out of 149 is pretty good. That's the only one.
Look at Dylan trying to bring in the fucking negativity.
Oh, please. I'm putting over the process.
Oh,
as I always
do. Everything on this, even the worst matches on this, are leagues better than that freaking 25-man two-ring match. That was bad stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that was a Will favorite.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be honest with you. Well, I think I've explained that process where I came in late to help finish up the product. That match would have never made it on there if I was part of it from day one.
It's kind of comical. You know what match I really loved on the All Japan set was Tenryu versus Mascaris. You know,
that's a good match.
You take a match like that, and I also really like Guerrero versus Fuchi. And, you know, I have them at 57 and 58, and I love them, you know. So it shows
really?
How much depth there is to the set that, you know, matches that you really like can be rated that low.
Yeah, like Tenryu Mascaris, my number 149 on the set. Oh, there you go.
Are you serious? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought I remember thinking it was one of those matches I didn't think should have been on. I think it was because didn't they have a bad ending?
I don't know. I like that match. I don't like it as much as Dave. I'm definitely the in between man on this one. I don't know where it would be, but it'd probably be in the middle range of my set. But again, the middle range on this is pretty good. Like, you know, the Tenryu match versus random guy from not from Japan that I thought was overrated was the Ole match, which I expected to really like, especially because me and Schneider usually agree on most things. And I just was like, wow, that happened.
Oh, I think you should watch it again. Right. I think it's probably easily the best singles Ole Anderson match I could think
of. Well, I don't like Ole Anderson, so that's not saying much. I mean, I like him as a promo. He's a great promo. Actually, probably underrated as a promo. But as a wrestler, Ole Anderson is a mean-faced Bruiser Brody. You know, eating every Yeti alive and not giving anybody shit. So I don't
care. They're seeing him legitimately get his ass beat by Charlie. Very, very satisfying.
Yeah, anytime a man gets savagely beaten against his will and deserves it, I'm all for that. So, any other thoughts, comments, questions, concerns, gentlemen, about the All Japan set?
Just not All Japan. Just keep looking for the Dusty Road set in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, enjoy the yearbooks. I hope people are enjoying those yearbooks.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of other quality stuff that Will has put together. So
that set you did of 1990s Pennsylvania based independence, I'm loving.
Dave was telling me about his favorite Larry Winters versus DC Drake match. I can't believe you dug up that footage, Will. That was an awesome find. Really great.
No fucking clue what you're talking about.
That Ray Odyssey versus Surfer Era Sandman street fight. It's high quality. But all joking aside, there's a bunch of good shit that Will has put together. So I will put over Will and I will shill on his behalf.
I'll just put it this way: as long as people keep buying it, I will keep making it.
Look at this guy. Yeah, altruism at its finest.
Can't wait for the AWA set myself. I think it's going to be fantastic. So.
Oh yeah, it will be. And I think Will can say, as far I know for a fact, that Will was not necessarily looking forward to the AWA set ahead of time. I think he, you know, thought that was a set that could be tedious and maybe not produce that much quality. And I think that is something that has been proven to be not true.
AWA is going to be a set that is really going to – it's going to be an eye-opener set for a lot of people.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Really,
I think it's going to be almost – I would go so far as to say I think it's actually going to be shocking to a lot of people because I think the standard viewpoint that the AWA – that it died after Hogan left, that there was really no quality – that it was just Vern putting over his kid all the time. Like, all these myths that you hear are going to be pretty severely busted, you know. And there's plenty of good wrestling. I mean, with the AWA set, I is it going to have as many great matches as All Japan? No, probably not. But there's going to be far more great matches than you would assume coming into it, with a huge variety of different wrestlers that sometimes it's going to shock you to see some of these matches in terms of who's matching up against
you. More than enough great matches, too.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, I can tell you right now, watching all this stuff, you know, and I've watched by far the most of the people that are on the committee for the AWA, and I could say right now, watching all the stuff that I've watched, I still don't know what my number one is. You know, you know. Usually, when I'm watching these sets after they've been, you know, made, put together, I pretty much know what my number one is. You know, right away when I'm done watching the footage, if I don't know when the first time I see it, you know, there's like a benchmark. Okay, this is good. Yeah. Watching the AWA set, I still don't have a match that I think is a clear number one. You know, watching all that footage, and that's not because there's not an obvious pick. It's because there's more really good matches than you might think. You know, there's a lot of them, a whole lot of them. So,
and Will, I think you'd mentioned at one point possibly doing an extra disc of 1990 stuff. I think that's a great idea.
Of what?
An extra one of the extras disc being some 1990 stuff. Of AWA.
Oh, for AWA. Yeah. Maybe just even the section, like, hey, you can get this on the yearbook, but you know what?
The
promotion lasted like three months after 1990. This is what you missed. You know, little blurb like that, maybe. You know, quality Larry Zbyszko versus Saito going on.
Yeah. Yep.
Grouper.
Yep. So,
and the Russian group.
and Trooper and DJ Peterson versus whatever.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So
yeah.
Anyway,
hey.
I got a birthday party to get to, so I better sign off here, guys. But
all right, well, have fun in Cuba.
He's Mr. Canada's always got something big planned. This guy is made of money. He's a big timer. So I'm sure he'll be heading down to fucking you know, Equatorial New Guinea or some shit next week. But,
actually, the reason that Cuba's been able to survive with socialism is because I subsidize them myself.
with your lucrative big money career. Yeah. So, anyway,
yeah.
Good show as always. Good to have Will on.
Yeah,
we'll do another one.
Thanks so much,
probably
next
week.
Will. We'll have to do it again.
Anytime.
All right, hasta la vista, kids. I'm hanging up so we don't have this awkward
care, guys.
Exo.
Later.
And make sure to watch that Careless Whisper video.
Yes.
Oh, God.
All right, bye.
Yeah, because I'll bye.
Take care, guys. Thanks a lot.